So yeah, please welcome Alex on stage. Thank you.
All right. Hello, everyone. Should we start, or because there is like still 1 minute left? I don't know if you want 1 minute break or. All right. Well, let's start, I guess. So yeah, thanks for the intro. Again, my name is Alex. I'm head of ML/DevOps and also DevRel at a company called Zencoder. I will briefly talk about Zencoder in a second. But we are essentially a competitor to Cursor or Windsurf, but we are not a standalone IDE, we are a plugin. But again, more about this in the end of the talk. Now, few fun facts about myself. So I've been in IT for more than 10 years now, mostly in machine learning, in different fields of machine learning. I also did a lot of DevOps and backend. I've been building Zencoder since the first days. For the last year, I've been mostly DevRel. This is my event number 41, yay, I guess. And this also results in a lot of different flights throughout this year. And I also have 4 Maine Coons, which are waiting for me back home in Portugal. Now, outside of that, going back to the agent, so you probably heard things like that, right? So that AI will soon replace developers, yada, yada, yada. So in this case, Mark Zuckerberg predicted that this will happen by 2030 and that AI will replace mid-level engineers. Now, all of those headlines are attributed to 2 main things, right? So first of all, of course, modules are getting better and better. And this here, for example, is from the recent release from Anthropic for Sonnet 4.5. It was released a couple of weeks ago. And as you can see, of course, the new model, whenever it comes in, it needs to beat the previous model. So of course, well, at least most of the results over here on this. My thing for some reason doesn't throws on the wrong. All right, well, if I use the Microsoft, okay. So yeah, as you can see, most of the benchmarks are sort of better than the previous models, but we are most interested, of course, in the coding, right? So the first 2 lines are about coding, and as you can see, Sonnet 4.5 is becoming better than the previous generation of the model. Models or LLMs in general, vanilla LLMs, they are still making mistakes. That's in their nature. Because they are trying to predict the most probable token, the most probable symbol. And this sometimes can lead to mistakes, right? So if you tried ChatGPT or if you tried Sonnet, you've probably seen some different mistakes, which they sometimes make. And they are good at finding patterns, but unfortunately, they're not really grounded in the physical world, in the real world, so they don't understand what is behind those patterns. But well, we all know how AI is with hands, so that's not surprising. Now, that's sort of the first part of why those headlines starting to pop up more and more recently. And the second one is what is called AI agent. So AI agent can be defined as a software that performs tasks on behalf of a user. And on its own, this definition is kind of similar to any classical software, right? Any classical software performs tasks on your behalf. The difference being the agents are following the following patterns, the following agentic design principles. First of all, they can use tools. And those tools can essentially be anything that LLM can use to gather more context, to gather more information about the environment, about the world, and so on. So that could be, for example, code execution. It could be access to databases, because why not give access to databases to LLM? Now, what could go wrong, right? So, well, sometimes that does go wrong. So tool use is still kind of helpful for LLM to become more contextualized about your environment, about your code, about maybe up-to-date information, and so on. Then the agents can also do planning. So they don't just blindly output the text. They also sort of pre-think about how to tackle the task. They might create a step-by-step plan. So if you use ChatGPT or Sonnet or Claude Desktop, for example, you might have seen this thinking process where LLM first thinks about the task at hand, maybe does some conclusions, and then creates a plan and then acts based on this plan. They can also reflect. So agents can verify its own work. They can reflect on the plan. They can reflect on the result of their work and so on. And then they can also collaborate with each other. So one agent can, for example, critique another agent, or a couple agents might work together. So maybe one agent work on some part of the plan, and the other agent works on the second part of the plan. And together, they ideally come up with a better result, better solution. And here's an example how those patterns increase the capabilities of LLM. So without any tools, without any agentic capabilities, GPT-5 on its own, on this specific benchmark, Humanities last exam, you can only get 6.3% over here. But once you get to the same model, just Python and web search, you can see immediately, and also the thinking, right, so the planning step, you can immediately see how significantly higher results are on the same benchmark for the same model. And for the even larger model, again, it's a bit further. But if we translate these patterns, these agentic principles, to our sort of everyday life, so let's take this example here. So let's say the task is to update the website from Figma designs based on latest changes. So the flow would look something like this. So first, the agent decides that it needs to use tools to get designs, of course, from Figma, right? So it gets some requests, get the updated result back. Then it does some planning, decides which files it needs to modify, it generates the code. Then it might decide to sort of reflect on its own work around the website. Again, this is another tool to run the website, to get screenshots of the page and so on. It might decide to compare the screenshots with the Figma designs. It's a sort of reflection and then tool use. And then it basically can loop this until it is satisfied with the result. And hopefully you as a user is also satisfied. There are a lot of different tools. So we will actually see some of them in action. And with that, let's actually finally do some coding. So all of the code I will be shown will be available, already available on this link over here. So if you want to play around after the talk with the multi-agent systems or with just agents in general, feel free to scan this QR code. And let me get to the code itself. So let me zoom in a bit. I usually throw it in a few, in several steps. So we start with the baseline, and I already pre-executed all the codes to save us some time. If you used LLMs, if you used ChatGPT, for example, and here I'm using GPT-5, you've probably seen these examples where LLMs have no knowledge about the outside world, right? So they sit somewhere in the cloud, they don't have access to any tools, to the internet, so they can't help us with pretty much anything outside of their own knowledge from the training data. So here I'm just sending directly the query to LLM. In this case, as I mentioned, it's GPT-5. And I'm asking it three questions, right? Not about the quest and whatnot, but first one is, what's the response time for Google, right? And of course, LLM GPT-5 doesn't know this because it is not able to perform Bing, for example, right? It still tries to be helpful, so it says that it can measure it from here, but it gives some commands, some examples, and so on. But it's still not something that we would want, right? Same goes with the access to my local machine. So I can ask it, for example, what are the Python packages I have installed? And again, it doesn't have access to my environment. It doesn't see it. But it still tries to be helpful and provide some commands, right? So pip, conda, poetry, whatever you use, right? And the same goes with the up-to-date knowledge. So for GPT-5, I believe the knowledge cutoff was about October 2024. And of course, Python 3.15 hasn't been released then. It's still not been released, but we already have some pre-release version, I believe. And of course, because it wasn't available before GPT-5 was released, it doesn't know anything about what is coming. It does still provide some links, and it kind of suggested these links, I would assume, based on the previous links, because all the previous versions of Python follow the same link format, right? It would be 3.14 and 3.14 here. So it sort of inferred the link for Python 3.15, but of course, it's still not something that we would want to get in real life world, right? Because let's say we are working some task with a new framework or with a new version of the framework, we would want our AI to be able to pull this information in that instant. All right, so let's see how we can extend the capabilities of LLM beyond that. So first, for that, we will be using what is known as React framework. And React stands for Reason Plus Act. And even though it was introduced 3 years ago, which is in the AI world is almost 30 years ago, it is still used pretty widely even now. And it is a good approximation of how you can make LLM start doing this thinking and planning process. And again, here I will be using GPT-5. And the actual framework implies that LLM runs through a loop of four steps. First is the thought. So LLM needs to think about what kind of action it needs to perform to get more context, to get more data, to answer the question posed by the user. Then there is an action step where the actual action selected by LLM is executed. There is pose where, well, the actual action is run somewhere in the, for example, in my local machine. There is observation step where LLM observes the result of the action, but the output of this command and so on. And then it might decide that it collected enough information and then it gives us the answer, or it will go into the same loop again until it collects enough information. And you can quite easily implement this through this system prompt. So really what all you need to do is just these five lines of text, right? So which are describing basically what I've just explained. Right? So thought, action, pose, observation, and then the answer. And I'm also providing a few commands for LLM to choose from. So as you can see, it has now available actions, which are ping, and it would be run as ping semicolon the website. Then there's bash to run bash commands. And there's web search to do a web search. I also provide some example session so that LLM is more aware of what is expected. And then, yeah, so basically in the end of the of this React loop, it ideally would give us the answer. Again, I'm querying the same GPT-5, which we just queried a second ago. Over here, I'm implementing all of those tools which I just gave to LLM. It is pretty basic implementation. You know, as you can see, it's nothing fancy. So just to check that they are working, ping is working. I have Python 3.12.6 locally, and the web search gave us a long list of text. And then over here, we are just implementing the React loop in the code. So essentially, just as I described, we query the model, and then the model is thinking and deciding which action it needs to perform in order to get enough information. We then detect if the action was selected by checking if there is action semicolon pattern. We execute that action. We give the result, the observation, back to LLM, and then LLM hopefully will give us the answer. And over here, I'm essentially just asking the same three questions which I just asked vanilla GPT-5. And as you can see here, first of all, for the response time, it decided to use ping correctly, right? We ran ping for it, we got observation, and then the LLM gave us the answer. The same goes with the Python packages. So it decided to run a pip-list command. We ran the pip-list. I have a long list of packages. Sorry, let me scroll it all the way down. And then, as an answer, GPT-5 gave us this sort of short summary of what packages I have installed, and I didn't know I have that many. All right, and then for the Python 3.15, again, I decided to do a web search, right? So the web search query is pretty straightforward. Python 3.15 was new. It got the content of this page, which is a long line of text. And it gave us, over here, it gave us essentially the summary of what is coming in Python 3.15. And again, the docs are for alpha release, for alpha version. So this might change, but of course, it is already aware of what is coming, what is new, and it is aware of up-to-date knowledge. Now, as I said, React framework is still being used even now, but providing tools like I did here is not the most standardized way, right? So let's say someone created a better web search tool than I did here, and I would want to swap from my web search tool to someone else's web search tool. In this case, in this scenario, I would need to go ahead, modify the prompt, maybe modify some examples, modify some inputs, outputs, and so on. And this is not very plug-and-play approach, right? Luckily for us, there is... let me go back to my slides for a second here. Luckily for us... And why does it open up here? Right. So luckily for us, there are a few frameworks which are available to provide LLM with tools in the most standardized approach. The most known is MCP, or Model Context Protocol, which is introduced by Anthropic in December 2024, so less than a year ago. But it has already been adopted even by the competitor, OpenAI, so it is pretty much the standard nowadays for the industry. And MCP consists of two main entities. First one being MCP client, of course, or LLM, which is responsible for deciding which tool to use and then processing the result of the tool run. And there is MCP server, which essentially first introduces the list of its own capabilities, so which tools it can use, which tools it can run, and what is the output of them. And it is also responsible for actually executing those tools. And those servers can access, of course, local resources or remote resources. Pretty much anything you can program to access, you can convert to MCP server. And here's how the whole flow would look like. So first, there's a handshake process where MCP client and MCP server do handshake. MCP server shares a list of capabilities, and then this list of capabilities is attached to the system prompt to LLM. And then whenever the user asks for something that requires more data, more context, the LLM can decide to choose to use some of the tools. So once it decides to use some external tool from the MCP server, it sends a request to that MCP server. The server itself then queries the external system, gets the data, sends back to LLM, and then LLM, hopefully based on this, can give us the answer right away. And here's an example of the tool. So in this case, it is for creating branches in GitHub repository. And as you can see, it is pretty much a standardized or a structured input for LLM, right? So it provides a name, description, input schema, so which parameters LLM needs to provide and which are required. And for each tool, similar text would be attached to the prompt, and then LLM can decide on its own which tool to use when it needs to perform some action. There are quite a lot of different MCP servers available, so links on that side is just a few marketplaces where you can find a lot of different MCP servers, but nowadays there are probably thousands of different servers available, and they are not just for IT, for development. So like here, for example, there is Grafana or ClickHouse, but they are also available for all the different everyday stuff as well. So pretty much for anything you can imagine, you can find an MCP server. And let's see quickly how they work. So over here, I'm switching to Anthropic, and here I'm using Sonnet 4.5. I'm implementing my MCP client. It is quite a long stretch of text, but the two main things here is, first, we are connecting to servers, we are getting their list of capabilities, and we are storing them to later be attached to the prompt to LLM. And then we are processing the query from the user, right? So as you can see here, we for all available tools, we attach name, description, and input schema, send this along with the user input to LLM, and then LLM can decide what it wants to run and so on. And thanks to that, we can quite easily replace or add new MCP servers just through this config, or like through this JSON config. In this case, I provided the LLM with access to file system tools, so it can read files, it can write files, set directories, and so on. It can fetch web pages, and can also run bash commands. And what this allows the LLM to do, again, it can now access my local system. So in this case, for example, I asked to run the Docker file, which contains a few errors, and through several steps, it was able to, first I decided to explore the content, decided to try to run it, found the errors. First one being the image not existing. The image I specified as the base image doesn't exist. So it fixed this. Then it found, I think, another error, which involves pandas not being installed. And then in the end, was able to finally run the Docker file, and it got the correct result of 4.4. Now, tools or function calling is essentially usually they are deterministic, right? So whenever you run the bash command, usually you would get the same output over and over. But you can also imagine those tools being replaced by agents or by another LLM, right? So then this also brings a lot of sort of indeterminism to the system, which can be a good or a bad thing, depending on how you look at this. But multi-agent systems essentially can be created in a few different sort of structures or different ways. So we, in a second, we'll see the supervisor schema, where we have one overseeing, overarching LLM or agent, which is controlling its own subordinate and then offloading some tasks to them, depending on their focus. But you can imagine, of course, different schemas and different networks of those agents, depending on units. There are quite a lot of different frameworks. I will be using LangGraph here in a second. It is an open source project that's free to use. But there are also, for example, Crew AI, which I believe is a premium model. And there is, for example, agent-to-agent protocol from Google, which is a new thing, and it is also open source. So let's see how those multi-agents would be implemented. So as I mentioned, I'm using LangGraph, but as a models, I'm still using Anthropic's model, rather models. So over here, I'm using actually two models, Sonnet 4.5 and Haiku 4.5, because Sonnet is good. It's a larger model. It is better at planning. It is better at pretty much everything over Haiku. But Haiku is much faster, and it is still pretty capable coder. So what I'm doing here is I will be using Sonnet for supervisor, but then Haiku would be used for all the different coding tasks so that the result would be obtained faster. And I'm also giving it the same tools, bash tool, search tool, file system tool, and so on. Over here, I'm defining all the different handles between agents. So as I mentioned, we are here implementing the supervisor schema, which means that we need to transfer the control, or hand off the control from each agent to another one. And over here, I have five, because we have one supervisor agent, being, in this case, product manager. And we have four subordinate agents, being backend, frontend, DevOps, engineer, and QA. And those four needs to transfer back to product manager, and then product manager can transfer to either of its subordinates. The prompt for each agent is pretty straightforward, right? So product manager is tasked with planning the project, planning the task, and assigning the tasks to each of the agent. Then each of the subordinate agent is tasked with implementing the task that got assigned. And they are respective backend, as I mentioned, frontend, DevOps and QA engineers. And then over here, we are just creating the sort of swarm of agents, with the default agent being product manager. This is just for coloring, so you can ignore this. And the task which they had was to build the conference website. It should have several pages, use Fast API, so pretty typical stack. And over here, I have quite a long list of text where they were basically working. So you can see product manager start with the first step of building backend, transfer to backend. Then backend agent started working. They used a bunch of code. Then it transferred to back to product manager. Product manager agent decided to start with the frontend next. They transferred to frontend. Then at some point it gave off to DevOps engineer. Let's see, it's a frontend. Yeah, so then DevOps engineer started working on this. There were quite a lot of issues with the frontend, which DevOps agent fixed at the end. And let me open the website over here. See how it looks like. I think it was on, this one. So this is what I built just in a matter of 5 minutes. And you can see during the testing, they also submitted a few docs over here. So essentially, they cover pretty much the whole part, not just coding, but also verification and, well, deploying to some extent, right? So deployed in my local machine through Docker Compose, but you could also specify these to be deployed elsewhere. Now, building agents is fun, of course, but you also might want to use them, just use them right away. And for that, you can, for example, try Zencoder. So what we provide, in addition to the plugin for VS Code Edgebrace, you can also define your own custom agents. So you can define your own backend engineer, front engineer, and so on. So in this case, I have a few agents which has been shared by my colleagues with my organization. And I can use them to create my own workflows of multiple agents, for example, in GitHub CI. And this, in turn, enables me to, for example, take out this Jira label ticket. I can just label it this label. And this kicked off first agent to solve this ticket. Let's see over here. It kicked off. Kick off the first agent. I might need to reload Jira. For some reason, it doesn't always trigger. Don't reload. Right. Well, I'm not sure why it's not triggering, but yeah, you can see previous runs. And here's what it would produce for us. So here, for example, is the pull request produced by the agent. Then I have another custom agent which would come in and do the pull request review. I could also have another custom agent which would answer these questions and so on. So basically, I can create sort of this multi-agent system just in my CI, and I would get into this state where all the code, all of the review is done by ChatGPT, and I would say that those pull requests are usually the most well-documented ones, which you usually see, which nowadays is not a good sign, I guess. Now, I think I'm running out of time, so I will skip this sort of future part, right? So just a quick note that, yeah, I think AI will not replace developers, but it will transform us in a more multi-skilled individual, right? So developer would be able to cover the whole cross-functional team, as you've seen in the example of multi-agent system. I was just reviewing essentially the code, but the agents were doing, they were covering for the whole cross-functional roles in the team. And yeah, the last one. Yeah, so if you want to try Zencoder, feel free to scan the QR code on the left. And if you want to connect with me, feel free to scan the QR code on the right. Thank you.
We have time for a few questions. Are there any raised hands? Over there.
Hi. In your experience, what is the code quality like when you use several agents talking together and they work on a existing project?
Mm-hmm.
Now, for example, one thing that I see often is that the style doesn't match mm-hmm. really the rest of the project. So, so I work on scikit-learn. Often it will not understand that NumPy fancy index. There's also, it uses for loops. So mm-hmm. in that sense, the style doesn't match. It's not a linter question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great question. So, first of all, in the multi-agent system and working and them working together, it sort of goes into this spec-driven development thing, which is emerging nowadays, where, the case which I showed with the multiple models is sort of in that vein, right? So you have the agent which is running, doing the spec, and then all the different agents are essentially developing the product. And on the second part, on not following the style and whatnot, AI nowadays requires a lot of guardrails, and those guardrails can be in the form of, first of all, of course, not doing something, but also can be in the form of rules. So a lot of products, a lot of coding assistants, they provide a way for you to define the rules, which AI should follow. So that's one thing. And then another thing is you still want, on top of the guardrails, you also want to let AI to be able to verify itself, verify its own work. And that could be in the form of linters. It can be in the form of tests. So if there are some styling things which you don't want AI to do, and you can add some checks for them, you might want to give that access access to that tool to AI to be able to potentially, in the end of the work, run it and see if the work is compliant with that tool or not.
Right. Are there more questions? I don't see a hand. I would have a question about like safety, how to avoid the AI deleting your database. Is there basically it's in the if you implement the tool correctly, if it just read only access to the database, it's probably a way, but
Yeah, that's a good question. I actually have a different talk about MCPs in general, but yeah, I think there are different ways, of course, and there are also different attack vectors, right? It's not just about dumping the database, it's also about prompt injections and whatnot. So when it comes to tools and MCP, first of all, of course, you want to limit its permissions, right? So for example, you mentioned read-only tools, and there are some MCP servers like Kubernetes, for example, Kubernetes MCP, they provide out-of-the-box a way for you to specify only read-only tools or non-destructive tools. So there is like two different flags which you can use when you run MCP server. You also might want to limit who in your organization can use which tool, right? So you probably don't want to give your juniors access to very powerful MCP tools, so that you know they don't get away over their head. And you also probably don't want to give LLM access to sensitive systems. Right, so production database is probably a no-go, or at least not in a read-write way, right? So that's basically, I guess, the basics of that. But yeah, of course, security, when it comes to AI, is still quite uncharted territory, I would say. And there is a lot of, actually, in this, one of the notebooks, you actually can find the security section, which I didn't cover here. But it basically gives examples of some prompt injections, which can hijack your LLM, essentially.
All right. So thank you very much. I think we are already in a break time, but yeah, let's have one more question. It's just wasting the break time of everybody else.
No pressure.
No pressure.
Sorry, you guys. No, just quick. Do you have any rule of thumb when you would use a single agent with multiple tool usage versus multi-agent setups? Mm-hmm.
So ideally, you want to focus your agent on specific tasks, right? So in my case here on the multi-agent system, I focused on more human-based roles, like backend or front engineer. But in reality, you probably want to focus on more task level, right? So for example, I know agent to run end-to-end tests, agent to perform unit tests, and so on. And this also allows you to focus the tools available to agent, because a lot of tools. First of all, as I've shown here in the slide over here, each tool essentially extends a prompt, right? So this text gets attached to the prompt, and you can imagine if you have 100 tools, the prompt will become quite big, quite fast. And some of the MCP servers are not written in the, I would say, most optimized way. So for example, Atlassian MCP has, I think, around 80 tools. So you can imagine attaching just one MCP server would overpopulate your prompt quite significantly. And with that, also you want to limit access to only tools which are necessary for the agent to do the job. And that's also why you want to focus on specific tasks. So if that's an agent to run end-to-end tests, you probably want to give it access to browser, but not to Atlassian, for example, right? So that, I guess, the sort of trade-off you want to take.
Thank you. Right. Thank you very much. So please enjoy your break, and you will probably be available for questions there. Thank you.
Thank you.